fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
If children are poor, there's all kinds of outcomes that we don't like. They can't get access to adequate dental care. They don't get enough to eat. They don't graduate from high school. They have less access to college. They're more likely to be drug abusers. You know, if you only give people bad choices, don't be surprised if they make a bad choice.
She calls out to the man on the street. He can see she's been crying. She's got blisters on the soles of her feet. She can't walk, but she's trying.
In the words of the late Carl Panasik, when you only give people bad choices, don't be surprised if they make a bad choice. 50 years ago, Carl helped start a local organization, CAP Services of Stevens Point, that was born in the War on Poverty, tasked with solving the often complex and difficult problems of those in need, with a mission of transforming people and communities to advance social and economic justice. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we mark the 50th anniversary of CAP Services, which continues to help people in a six-county region in central Wisconsin. With a woman who's carrying on the long legacy of the organization, Executive Director Mary Patoka. We'll get a statewide perspective from Ken Taylor, the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, and a national perspective from the keynote speaker at this week's anniversary celebration, anti-poverty activist Sister Simone Campbell, the executive director of Network. All three are here in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios to discuss the recurring and persistent problem of poverty, and they are waiting for your phone calls. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it live on the air. And as always, it's early in the show, and that means all three of our phone lines are wide open. If you'd like to talk to Sister Simone Campbell and our guests, this is a wonderful time for you to get through. 1-800-780-9742. Mary Patoka, let's start with you. Tell us about the celebration last night.
Well, we were thrilled to have so many of our dear friends and donors and volunteers and guests join us. We had about 300 people for the program. Very appreciative for all that helped make it happen, including some of our sponsors, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, a longtime partner in a few different programs and services that we offer, helped sponsor Sister Simone. So we were very thankful to them, and both Ministry Healthcare and SVA Professional Services helped with the cost of the venue and the food. So we thank them very much, and everyone for joining us and recognizing this landmark.
I saw a post from Mike Wiesa, the mayor of Stevens Point, showing all the people assembled in that room, and his comment on Facebook was, I had no idea CAP Services had helped so many people.
Well, it's true. Over the years, we have tried to build programs to meet the needs of low-income people. Some have come and gone. Currently, we offer about 30 programs. And so it's really hard for the average person to get their head around all of that. But the bottom line is we are there to try and level the playing field as much as we can for people who don't have the same opportunities as maybe some of the rest of us.
What counties do you serve in central Wisconsin?
The primary counties are Portage, Wapaka, Washera, Outagamie to the east, Marquette to the west, and we do certain things in Wood County as well.
And how are you similar to and different from other community action agencies in Wisconsin?
Well, every community action agency across the country, and there are about 1,000 of them, share three things. One, we were all born out of the war on poverty, and as a result, share in a pot of federal money that is distributed to the states based on poverty population. And we are then charged with using those resources to address poverty. So we do that by a needs assessment survey every 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we all clearly know what people need. Our board of directors is comprised in the same manner across those 1,000 agencies, one-third low-income, one-third public officials, so we have that public partnership, and then one-third the community at large. So those three things we share, and so some CAP agencies look alike, and some will look very different because they're trying to respond to their local poverty needs.
50 years is a long run. It's a shame Carl Panasik isn't here to see it.
Oh, absolutely. We miss him dearly, and certainly, though, in his run, he built an organization that needs to be here in the long run. We have strategies for generating revenue so we can meet our mission regardless of the whims of Congress or any of the other
right.
donors or supporters we have.
Well, we'll be hearing some of Carl's words a little bit later in the program. Sister Simone Campbell, you were the keynote speaker last night. What was your message?
The message is that these issues that you all are facing here in central Wisconsin, they're issues that we all face across the country, and that the issue of poverty is not about them. It's about us, because we are not in an individualistic society. Democracy, it means we're community. And being in it together, we the people need to be, as we say in the faith circles, our brothers and sisters' keepers. That means we need to pay attention to what's going on. The quality of life for everyone is affected by how those who are most at the margins are living. And so my quality of life is greatly improved when folks can participate in some of the CAP services programs, like hearing about the financial planning, the job training, the housing. I was so stunned to hear about the housing programs that CAP services have done, because one of the biggest challenges for low-income people is finding affordable housing. Our housing policy nationally is really a problem. Most people can't afford rent anywhere in this nation, folks who are in the bottom 20%. And the innovative work that's being done here raised a lot of joy for me, because it said we the people are engaged in solving some of these problems.
Why is fighting poverty so important for you, Sister Simone, and how does that tie in with your Catholic faith and specifically your interpretation of the message of Jesus Christ? Because you're motivated by something, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And for me, I joke about most everything. But as a young person, I realized that justice and Jesus both began with J, so they were always connected for me. Jesus' message in the gospel of go and do likewise was always about walking towards trouble, walking towards those who were left out, walking towards those who were pariahs or lepers in the society. But I'll say, to answer your question, it's a lot easier these days having Pope Francis as our pope, because here Pope Francis is walking towards those who are most left out. And his message of inclusion, of everyone is welcome, of come to me, is all at the heart of what we're doing, because we are better people when we are aware of who's not at the table and bring them in. That's why we do what we do.
Ken Taylor, tell us about the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. And I was kind of stunned to find out that your organization goes back 135 years?
Yes, that's right. We were founded in 1881. We're the oldest group of our type in the country. And so we're an advocacy organization focused on kids and families. We're located in Madison, but we work on issues across the state. And so our vision of a state is a state where every child can grow up in a just family and nurturing community. And we're working hard over 135-year history to get there.
Well, 1881, that's before what was commonly viewed as the progressive era in Wisconsin. So your organization was really groundbreaking in a lot of ways.
It was, and we've worked on a wide range of issues. So as Mary spoke about the CAP agencies and how they're different based on their local realities, our agency has changed over time as things have changed over time. So we spent decades working against child labor. Well, we've gotten past that for the most part.
Well,
locally.
Maybe.
I'm seeing some questioning glances from my colleagues
knock,
here.
Knock on wood.
Right, we'll see. But so we're working on other things over time. And so
now, is this a private organization, a public organization, a little bit of both?
We are a nonprofit organization. Just like CAP agencies, we have various different funding streams, but we actually get very little support from public sectors because we need to be independent advocates on behalf of kids, and sometimes that includes criticizing what's going on, and we need to have that independent voice So we don't get much of our funding from the public sector.
Your reflections on the 50th anniversary of CAHPS Services.
Well, it was very inspiring for me to come here and hear the direct stories of the people who are both working for the agency and the people that they are serving. And so that relationship that is built, I think, is really important. And one of the things that I've always admired about community action agencies is the board composition to mm-hmm. keep connection. And as we are doing our work on the statewide level, having a relationship with people who are doing the actual work on the ground and connecting with the people who we're in relationship with is so important so that we're not isolated and disconnected from that reality when we're doing our work in Madison.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the 50th anniversary of CAHPS Services of Stevens Point, an anti-poverty agency that was born in the war on poverty in the 60s. And our guest today, their executive director, Mary Patoka, also Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, and national anti-poverty activist Sister Simone Campbell, the keynote speaker last night. They are all in our studio, and they are waiting to hear from you. If you think poverty is a problem, if you have personal stories that you'd like to share with us of people you know or perhaps something that's happened to you where you've seen people fall through the cracks, this is your chance to talk to a nationally recognized anti-poverty expert, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Mary, again, this is an organization that was born in the 1960s. A lot has changed since then, but poverty remains. How has CAHPS Services had to change to keep up with the changing times?
Well, certainly I think that we need to be a strong organization, first of all. And so certain the things that we have tried to do is look at ways to diversify our funding so we are strong. But the kinds of things that we are doing really have focused past some of the safety net programs. Not that they're not important and not that we don't connect our families to those, but we really look at those kinds of programs and services that build assets, build income, or certainly reduce expenses. And so things like our weatherization program saves probably $500 on average for mm-hmm. people who get some energy conservation measures. But the workforce training, the business development program, certainly over time we've had to really raise the capital to be able to lend to people who want to start a business because they're not necessarily bankable when they really want to make that move. Or homeowners. We've just started a first mortgage program just because there are people whose credit scores are hovering at that 675 and banks aren't necessarily looking at them as a viable mortgagee. So some of our products and services have evolved. We now have a car purchase program. Not a big loan, but we can give you a $5,000. We can give you a 0% interest loan if you need a more reliable vehicle to get to work.
You help entrepreneurs start businesses, too.
Yes. So we've been doing that for about 25 years, but the need for capital has certainly grown. This year, we probably in the first 4 months of the calendar year have lent out as much as we did last year. Lots of loans last year, but they were small. This year, we're seeing many more companies come to us who want to purchase, you know, an employee from an owner who's getting ready to retire. And so we want to keep those businesses viable. We want to keep those jobs in our communities. And so that's a piece we can do. And sometimes the banks, they're just not ready for the banks, but they might be ready for us. And then the banks start looking at them later, which is a good thing,
Sister Simone, the same question. We began the war on poverty in the late 60s, but poverty continues to be a persistent problem. Why is that?
Well, I think one of the big reasons right now is that wages have been flat for so long. And one of the things that people don't realize is those at the bottom of the income ladder have actually lost income over the last 34 years because wages have been so flat. So they earn if you make equivalent dollars, they earn less now than they did in 1980. So poverty is no longer just those who don't have employment, poverty is also those who are employed, and that is a huge change from 1960. In nowadays, 2014, 67% of those households using social safety net, those are things like food stamps, housing vouchers, Badger Care, the 67% had at least one adult working full time. So the issue isn't that the stereotype, the 60s stereotype is people were lazy. But that's not true. Our people are working hard, but they're working hard but not making enough. And what CAP Services is working on is that integrated approach that moves low-wage people out of those low-wage jobs or provides greater sources of funding for them. And that is an integrated approach that is called for that is different than the original War on Poverty.
But do you hear still some people say that? People on food stamps are lazy. There's a move nationally that you shame people who are on public assistance or food stamps. Or in Wisconsin, you require people on unemployment compensation to take drug tests.
Well, that's because we want to judge. I'm a person of faith, so I pray about these things, trying to understand. And one of the reasons that I realize that people want to think people who are in low-income positions are lazy is because I know I'm not lazy. And if I'm not lazy and only the poor are lazy, I'll never be poor. But the truth is our economy is so vulnerable and so we're insecure in this economy. So I'd rather judge you and keep me feeling safe and secure. This is a problem we have to break open. The truth is the majority of people in poverty are working poor, and that's the truth. But we have a different stereotype.
Same question for you, Ken Taylor. 1966, the war on poverty. We were going to eliminate poverty once and for all, and it is still with us.
It is, and it's changed in numerous ways. And one of the things that I'm most concerned about is kids in poverty.
Amen.
So, you know, worried about anyone in poverty. It's not a good thing for anyone. But back in the 60s when the war on poverty was started – the highest levels of poverty were within seniors, and we made significant investments. We decided as a society that's not okay. We made significant investment, and now seniors are the least poor segment of our society. It's not okay that almost 10% of seniors are poor, but the fact that the poorest segment of our society are kids, and in fact the poorest of the kids are the young kids, and we know the long-term negative impacts of poverty on brain development and future expectations and well-being. That's what's primarily concerning me now in the changes.
Well, at the top of the show, we heard Carl Panasik talk about the negative things that happen when kids grow up in poverty. They lack medical and dental care. They don't get enough to eat. They drop out of high school. They don't go to college. They use drugs. They get into trouble. And then they have kids and the problem repeats itself.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why we feel so strongly that we need to look at multi-generation approaches. The catchphrase right now is two-generation approaches. I actually think it's three generations or more.
Please.
But the fact is that we know that we can't support kids outside of the context of their families. These are all interconnected, and we need to address multiple issues because they are multi-generational.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, Mary Patoka of CAP Services, or National Anti-Poverty Activist Sister Simone Campbell. Let's go to Chris in the Wisconsin Dells. Chris, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. I have a rather peculiar story, and it's not a typical story, but I ended up homeless. I was literally sleeping on a cardboard box in James Madison Park in Madison, Wisconsin. I owned a home for 20 years, and I went to college. I was actually a scholar and won a fellowship. It was all taken away from me because I blew the whistle on the University of Wisconsin system, and they've been punishing me for 30 years because of it. But anyway, what I have learned, because I'm writing a book about this whole fun situation, what I've learned in the 15 years since that little episode happened to me is that people who live at the bottom of society have to deal with things that other people don't have to deal with. I've been repeatedly arrested for nothing. I've had the police in my face over and over and over again for nothing. I don't do anything wrong. And and people are cruel. I've been lectured by a cop for an entire hour about how I obviously did something to deserve what was happening to me, and that I just needed to pick myself up by my bootstraps and get on with it. I'm 100% disabled. I live on 60% of the federal poverty level, and during the course of the past couple of years, my rent has doubled, but my food stamps have gone from $225 a month down to $25 a month because of Scott Walker. People are inflicted with this notion that we can just punish people into being part of the society when the society is just bashing people up against a wall and doing absolutely nothing to help. I mean, I've been in contact with social services, and what they do is they give you a booklet, and they say, here, go call nonprofit agencies. They don't help. Anyway, you can comment on that as you will.
Chris, thanks so much for the phone call. God bless you. Take care of yourself. Sister Simone, let's have you respond.
Oh, Chris, unfortunately, your story is repeated over and over. And I think one of the steps forward out of the war on poverty was this idea that there is even disability payments. I mean, that was a huge step forward to acknowledge that some folks, as you're saying, aren't able to work because of a variety of circumstances. But I think really the toughest part is the relationships, is that when people go from secure jobs into insecurity of unemployment and then illness and disability, you lose your friends, you lose your contact, you lose your community. It's a similar story, but I met a woman in upstate New York, Anne, who has a master's degree. Her husband had a master's degree, and in the recession, they both lost their job, they lost their house, they have four teenage kids. They were desperate and terrified and shamed, and so they lost all of their relationships that supported them. And so folks who are newly poor, what Anne told me was, we lost everything, and the worst part to lose was our friends. And how they came together finally because of their church, they finally found a way back in. But the loneliness of poverty, the loneliness of struggling, and that's why things like CAP services is so important, is to get woven back into a fabric of a community that cares for you.
Sister Simone, you gained a lot of attention in the last election cycle with the nuns on the bus tour. We understand that you will soon be back on the bus and visiting both the Republican convention in Cleveland and the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. Tell us about that.
Well, let us pray to the Lord. I'm still raising money for this event, but I think I'll get there. We know that what we have to look at in our society is what we're calling mending the gaps. The gaps between the ultra-rich, the income and wealth disparity in our nation. We've got to mend these gaps and reweave the fabric of our society. So we want to engage Republicans and Democrats in the conversation. And we've asked for time to do workshops at the Republican convention. We asked for it at the Democratic convention. We've gotten 3 workshop slots at the Democratic convention, but the Republicans told us they were in a bit of disarray and that we should get back to them.
They're in a bit of disarray.
Yes, that's what we were told. And that we should get back to them at the end of or the beginning of June to see what might be possible.
You know, both of those events might be rather raucous this July.
But you know what? That's the problem, is that they're siloed and raucous and separate. And we're going to both so that we can have conversation, because if we don't give people a chance to be community to each other, we stay separate and angry, and that is not good for democracy. That's not the way forward.
What would Pope Francis think about the tenor of the political debate going on in America right now with the words of Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders?
Oh, well, Bernie Sanders tweets out the Pope all the time, so the Pope would probably like having his quotes out there. But I think the key thing that what Pope Francis said to Congress in when he was here in September last year, he said, I'm here to build bridges and to urge all men and women to build bridges between folks who are divided. He didn't use folks. He said the people of your land that are divided. And so I think what he's trying to do is to bring us together, and that's what we're trying to do. We can talk to each other.
Sister Simone Campbell and also Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. and Mary Patoka, the executive director of CAP Services. We're going to take a short break. We were talking about the 50th anniversary of CAP Services. I'm Glenn Moberg. You can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742 or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. When we come back, you'll hear some recorded comments from Carl Panasik, who guided CAP for much of its history. Here's a singer who grew up poor and often sang about it, the late, great Merle Haggard.
Things I learned in a hobo jungle were things they never taught me in a classroom. Like where to find a handout while bumming through Chicago in the afternoon. Hey, I'm not bragging nor complaining, I'm just talking to myself man to man. This old mental fat I'm chewing didn't take a lot of doing, but I take a lot of pride in what I am.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like the Chippewa Valley Cultural Center and the Madison Symphony Orchestra. Become a business sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, offering solar energy and wood boiler system design and installation in Wisconsin, as well as deep energy retrofits to homes. NorthwindRE.com.
They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Rudy Valley with that hymn from the Great Depression as we focus on Route 51 on the 50th anniversary of CAP Services of Stevens Point with our guests, Executive Director Mary Patoka, Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, and National Anti-Poverty Activist Sister Simone Campbell. I'm Glenn Moberg. Again, you can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742 or by putting a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. When we think about poverty, we often think of the hobo jungles and the breadlines of the Great Depression, but we came very close to having a second Great Depression in 2008 with the near total collapse of the U.S. economy. And while the national recovery has been impressive, the stock market now at unheard of record high levels, unemployment below 5%, and we saved the U.S. auto industry, still for many of us there has been no recovery. In fact, many lived at or near the poverty level before the collapse of 2008. How can so many things be going so right with our country and so wrong for so many people? And Sister Simone, we'll have you pick up on that.
Well, I think that is the huge challenge. And the fact is that we have focused more on the markets and banking than we have on wages and the needs of ordinary workers. And so the pressure from the financing side of things to make a profit, to look secure, to not carry a lot of debt has been a greater focus in public policy than the issues that Ken's raised about the issues of children of working families that live in poverty, the struggling of workers with erratic hours and low wages, the struggle of families who are attempting to save a little bit and can't do it because they don't have enough to get by. So while our attention was on the big macroeconomics, we have not paid attention to the struggling folks of we the people. That's the focus that needs to change. That's what we're trying to lift up.
Yeah, and in Wisconsin, I'm just going to throw a couple numbers out there to put some context around this. So we're talking about 750,000 people in our state that live below the poverty line, three quarters of a million people, and 250,000 children live below the poverty line in 2014. And so the implications of that, so that's like We're here in Marathon County. That's like two full Marathon counties of poor kids in our state. The implications for that and the fact that that number's going up and not going down is significant, and we need to have a serious conversation about it.
Can I add to that too? Because a lot of people don't realize; they just think, "Oh, you know, kids living in poor families, that it's a it's a problem. It's a hard." When kids don't know where their next meal is coming from, it seriously impacts their development, makes them anxious, makes them unable to concentrate at school or to even relax when they get home. What we know is parents who can make a living wage means that then kids can relax and learn. Kids don't have the same stressors, don't have the same illnesses. Families do better. There's several studies out. Families with a small nest egg, $2,500 to $5,000, have lower divorce rates, have a greater sense of better development of their kids. Their kids are more likely to graduate from high school. And what our current poverty approach has been is that families have to spend down to almost zero, lose your nest egg in order to get any support, which only increases the anxiety for families. So we need a family-centered approach. We need both the macro I'm not negating the need for the macro controls, but we also need to look at the micro reality of what's happening.
How do you deal with politicians who say that there's no role for government in taking care of poverty, that it's something that we have to do through private charities and churches and people have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps?
Well, then Congressman Ryan, now Speaker Ryan, had that idea. And his idea was that churches would take care of people's need for food. So he proposed these huge cuts to the food policy. And Bread for the World, a food advocacy organization in D.C., figured out that his cuts alone, just to food, would require every church, every synagogue, every mosque, every house of worship in the United States to raise an additional $50,000 every year for 10 years. To fill in the hole he was creating by cutting food. It is wrong in the richest nation on earth that our people don't eat. It is a social necessity. It's we the people. We the people share a responsibility for each other. And the way we do that is through some government policy. Yes, we all need to participate. Charity is important. But it's justice to eat.
You have met with Paul Ryan on a couple of occasions.
Yep.
And he has backed off on his previous infatuation with libertarian philosopher Ayn Rand, who famously said that if you're poor, you probably deserve to be poor, and Catholic and Christian virtues like altruism are vices. They are not virtues.
Right. And he had this line that here are takers and makers, and he was a maker, and those in poverty were takers. Well, he says that it was at the Wisconsin State Fair that somebody came up to him and said, but your mother was a taker. She took Social Security. And that shocked him. It got him to see that his analysis had been really missing, lacking. I like to think we helped nudge him in that direction. But the fact is he now knows is that we share a social responsibility for each other. What he's going to do with it, I don't know. He's coming out with some new poverty ideas. I'm looking forward to seeing
You've
him.
Asked Paul Ryan to go on the Nuns on the Bus
yes,
tour. Is he going to go
yes.
with you?
I don't know. His scheduler said no the first time. So we said, well, could we change the date? We want to start in Janesville. We'll make it work for him. Let us know. So I'm hopeful that he'll come.
As we mentioned in the first segment, CAP Services got its start in 1966 as part of Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. It had its funding severely cut during the Reagan administration and had to adjust to changing times. Here are some comments from the late Carl Panasik, who guided CAP for many years, as he describes how the organization had to change to meet those challenges.
We've evolved over the years just as the economy has changed, just as society has changed. When we first started as a community action agency, we primarily tried to link up people to all the new federal programs. A lot of people don't realize food stamps didn't exist before the 1960s. There was commodity programs, but there wasn't food stamps. Social Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, didn't exist before the 1960s. Formal employment and training programs had been ended during World War II and had never been restarted. So there were a lot of new programs that came out. Community action agencies initially focused on getting those people hooked into those services. In 1981, we went through a catharsis with the Reagan Revolution. The Reagan recession and the Reagan Revolution caused us to lose a third of our revenues from September 30th, 1981 to October 1st, 1981.
Were those outright cuts from the government, or was that because of some of the other implications of the economic downturn?
No, that was primarily the Reagan administration proposed and Congress disposed, and we were literally lost a third of our funding. So we went through this catharsis, and we thought about what our future was. Do we really need an anti-poverty agency was one of the questions. If so, what should we be doing, and how should we be doing it? And we came upon a great truth, and that is you can hook people up to resources, but the reality is until they have a living wage job, access to affordable health insurance, and affordable housing, you really haven't helped them very much. You can give them emergency food, you can give them emergency shelter, you can give them an emergency food assistance and fuel assistance, and they're still going to be poor. So we decided at that point to redefine ourselves. We were not going to be just a typical community action agency. We were truly going to be an anti-poverty agency that measured our success in terms of the number of people we moved out of poverty every year. Our community action agency gave up a lot of programs like the emergency fuel program. We don't run that program. We'll weatherize your house so you can reduce your energy consumption so you have more money to spend for medicine and food, but we won't just give you money and say, here, spend it for fuel. We don't do emergency food. We don't do emergency shelter, other than if you're a domestic violence victim.
Poverty is still a problem in central Wisconsin.
It is, and it's getting bigger, and it's more insidious than ever because it's affecting more and more children. And if children are poor, there's all kinds of outcomes that we don't like. They can't get access to adequate dental care. They can't get access, in many cases, to adequate medical care. They are they don't get enough to eat. They don't graduate from high school at the same rate as non-low-income people. They have less access to college. They're more likely to be drug abusers. You know, if you only give people bad choices, don't be surprised if they make a bad choice. And what we have to do is make sure that people have choices. They take responsibility for those choices, but that they have choices that say, okay, if you go down this path, this is what you're going to encounter. And if you go down this path, this is what you're going to encounter. And help them overcome those barriers that we all face. But in the end, we know which path is the path to self-sufficiency, and that's primarily education, good health, good housing.
The late Carl Panasik in comments recorded on Route 51 a few years back. Mary Patoka, you are carrying on for Carl as the executive director of the organization he had so much to do with, CAP Services. Your reaction to what you just heard?
Well, I think, Carl's comments still hold today. We updated our mission statement. Prior, it was focused on the individual, self-sufficiency, and we still think that's very important, but we can't do that in a vacuum. So people can't get a decent paying job if they're not new businesses getting started. So that's part of our strategy. People can maybe buy a house, but if they can't afford rents, they need somebody to create that affordable housing. So the community part of our building is certainly as important as the work we do with our individuals. And so Carl's comments hold true. You got to give people choices that take them forward instead of take them back, or we just aren't interested in helping people be comfortable while they're poor. We just want to help them advance.
Can I just highlight that last night at the event, the celebration, 10 outstanding families, people were honored for their accomplishments. But one of the guys that really touched me was this guy who made some bad choices, did jail time, struggled, is now in his own business, is employing others, is making a difference and contributing. And that magic of the individual growth with a social system perspective is really making the difference for this area.
Yeah, and I'd also like to pick up on something that Carl said in that clip, and that's about moving people out of poverty. And as a nation, we always think of ourselves as the land of opportunity. Right. And what's become the case is that for people that are in the furthest from opportunity, the chances of moving up the income scale are really slim. And so there's this researcher that studies this, and his comment was, if you want to live the American dream, you need to move to Canada because you're much more likely to move from the bottom to the top. And so not only is there income inequality, but there's also a decreasing capacity for people to move from the bottom to the top in our society that we think of as a meritocracy.
Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, Mary Patoka of CAPS Services, and national anti-poverty activist Sister Simone Campbell. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Larry in Kingston. Larry, you're on Route 51.
I want to thank you all for the work you do, but I have a plan that I think would work. Is you take retired tradesmen, plumbers, electricians, refrigeration, carpentry. You go into the poor neighborhoods and set up tents and have a 6-week program for kids. And you know, you get them out early to exercise for 15 minutes, give them breakfast, and then show them something where they can take it back to their house and fix something. And it would build up their neighborhoods, build up their pride. And I think that would go a long way in fighting poverty.
Larry, thanks so much for the phone call. Sister Simone?
Larry, I totally agree that we have a real resource in our retired folks who can provide training and mentoring going forward. And what we heard on the bus last fall is that some of those kinds of programs are taking shape and that there is a real worry about these physical skills and trades, that there's not enough folks in the pipeline, especially in the north, because so many people moved to the south where construction was going on in the recession. And so there's a real need for folks to do these very physical skills. So I think you're on to something. Community colleges often can provide that, the trade schools. But also, this is one of the places where we miss unions and union training and apprenticeships so that workers and business can come together and train folks, train young people going forward. It's beginning to happen, but I think you're on to something. It's a great idea.
Larry, thanks so much for the phone call. Maybe you made a little history here. Maybe you're going to change things. Thanks for the innovative ideas.
You're welcome. Bye.
We're going to take a short break today on Route 51. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of CAPS Services of Stevens Point with Executive Director Mary Patoka, Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, and national anti-poverty activist Sister Simone Campbell. You can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742 or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Here's Ray Charles.
My bills are all due and the baby needs shoes and I'm busted. Cotton is down to a quarter of a pound, but I'm busted. I got a cow that went dry and a hen that won't lay. A big stack of bills that gets bigger each day. The county's gonna haul my belongings away, cause I'm busted.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Katie's American Indian Arts, Candina's Chocolatier, and Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Details at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Dominique et Nicanica s'en allaient tout simplement au Dieu, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu.
That's Sister Simone Campbell, national anti-poverty activist, having a little bit of a chuckle with us with The Singing Nun with that big hit in 1963. Taking us into our final segment of Route 51 as we focus on the 50th anniversary of CAPS Services of Stevens Point with our guests, Sister Simone and Executive Director Mary Patoka of CAP and Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Family Services. Rosalind on Facebook writes, for you, Sister Simone, is it just me or is there a large chasm voiced concern by Catholic clergy over the growing divide between the wealthy and the rest of us? We hear about religious leaders who are supporting the element in government, who are blaming and taking away from the poor, unemployed, and underemployed. How can we convince clergy to speak out against greed and lack of concern that has overtaken too many politicians, and how can we convince them that they must offer solutions?
I think that's a really a big challenge, because there really has been a sea change, especially within the Roman Catholic tradition, with our Pope Francis's approach. And one of the things that I've tried is to just make sure that clergy receive and read Pope Francis's documents. Two key documents are Joy of the Gospel, and the other is Laudato Si, which is his encyclical on – or his letter on the economy and the environment. And this, what Pope Francis says in that encyclical is that the reason we have an environmental crisis is the same reason we have a crisis in income and wealth disparity, is that we are exploiting our people, we're exploiting our earth, and we need to stop it. So I'm trying to get clergy to make sure they read it, and if not, I'll give them the summary version.
You've got politicians saying that climate change isn't even happening, or if it is, we shouldn't be doing anything about it.
Right, but there was a recent study that found out the reason they're doing that is because it's going to cost a lot of money to fix it. So it's easier for them to deny it than it is for them to engage it and spend the money necessary to change it.
I found it interesting that Donald Trump, who says climate change is a conspiracy by the Chinese to hurt American business, it turns out that he wants to build a wall, a seawall, near one of his golf courses, and the reason that he gave for asking for the permit is because of the reality of climate change and rising sea levels.
Consistency is not something that's strong in his campaign. So I think the more and more we're going to see that Donald Trump has for business is pragmatic, but when it comes to governance, he really has no idea of the whole idea of the common good, we the people in it together.
Let's go to Vicki in Arkdale. Vicki, you're on Route 51 with our guests.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to follow up on something Sister Simone said about anxiety and for children in poverty. I think that it goes beyond anxiety for many children. The situations that poverty creates for their parents may include substance abuse, arguments. I don't want to imply that it causes domestic violence, but it can exacerbate it in those situations. And I had attended a conference on the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Experiences, and Dr. Anda pointed out that the cortisol and adrenaline that is generated by our bodies when we are in trauma has a lifelong effect on us. And I guess I'm just wondering if any of your panelists have more to say about that.
Vicki, we got to cut you short because we're running out of time, and I want our guests to have a chance to respond.
Sure.
Let's start with Ken
just
Taylor.
Just real quickly, that is a really important point that you raise, Vicki, and it's very true. The science, the brain science, the brain development science all reinforces what you said, the cortisol and the people – kids who grow up in poverty are constantly triggering their flight and fight response and not able to relax and step down from that. And that has really significant long-term impacts, which ends up in the description that Carl made earlier in the challenges in later life.
Mary Patoka, in terms of taking care of children and families, 10,573 children enrolled in Head Start or early Head Start through CAP services, 422 families served in the Family Literacy Program, and also 60,625 shelter nights at the Family Crisis Center over the past 27 years, people you have helped with through CAP services.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as we talked a little bit last night, we've done a lot. And we know we've made a positive impact on families, but there is so much work yet to be done. And one of the problems, or challenges, I should say, in delivering services is you probably can never have enough service. There just aren't the resources to manage all of that. And so we really have to look at some of those public policy questions. You know, the conversation about adverse child experiences. We know that sometimes your zip code drives more your life expectancy than your genetic code. So poverty certainly drives into that.
Ken Taylor, we're just about out of time. You've got 15 seconds.
Well, I just think that you know, Sister Simone's point about coming together both in community and as a state and as a nation, all sectors is essential to move forward.
Sister Simone?
We at Network, we have seven policies that can make the difference, that can bridge the gap. It's tax justice, living wage, family-friendly workplaces, access to democracy where everyone votes, access to health care, access to citizenship, and access to housing. If we address just seven policy choices, we the people can be better.
Hey, help the poor.
Help the poor.
Won't you help poor?
We want to thank today's guest, Sister Simone Campbell, Executive Director of Network. You can find out more about the organization at networklobby.org. Also, thanks to Ken Taylor of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. You can find out more at wccf.org. And last but not least, we want to thank Mary Patoka, CEO and President of CAP Services of Stevens Point. You can find out more at capservices.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Phil Collins, Merle Haggard, Rudy Valley, Ray Charles, The Singing Nun, and B.B. King and Eric Clapton. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of this show, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Sister Simone will be following you with the Nuns on the Bus tour this summer. And until next week, we're heading out of town.